Hello, everyone. I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from unceded Gadigal land.
I'm Mari Forth.
And this is Crime Scene, the True Crime Review podcast, where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. We'd love it if you would subscribe to our feed. Please go to robhazawebsite.com/crimefeed. You'll get your true crime on Tuesdays, as well as helping keep this program going.
If you've already subscribed, thank you very much. It makes a big difference.
Sarah,
what did we watch this week?
So let's open today's file. We watched Orgasm Inc., The Story of One Taste on Netflix. It was directed by Sarah Gibson, who previously produced Britney versus Spears and At the Heart of Gold Inside the USA Gymnastics Scandal, which Mari and I liked very much. And Sloane Cleven, an accomplished editor, making their directorial debut here. They also edited this documentary. So we talk about true crime here on the podcast. There's an implied warning, I suppose, on everything that we do. Things may be disturbing, fruitcake fraud notwithstanding. We've heard from our listeners, however, that they do appreciate specific warnings on especially heinous crimes. So today we'd like to take a moment to warn you that the documentary and our discussion will be in part about sexual assault. And for today, the cult One Taste used the P word for vagina and the C word for penis. And if we do that during the podcast, be assured we are quoting the language of the cult. We have an amazing guest to join us today, Mari. We last spoke to her in episode 14 when we discussed Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey. Yes, it's Survivor Diversity campaigner and reality TV commentator, Crime Scene's very own cult correspondent, Gia Worthy. Hey, Gia, welcome to the scene.
Oh, thank you once again for having me back. It's great to be in the Crime Scene sphere once again. And also, I just have to say I wear the cult correspondent badge as a badge of honor, and I'm just very excited to be putting on my little sleuthing hat again to be talking about another documentary with both of you.
Yes, so glad to have you back, Gia.
Let's get to the crime if we must. I suppose that's what we're here for. One Taste was co-founded in San Francisco in 2001 by Robert Kandel and Nicole Dadone. Dadone stated that a Buddhist monk introduced her to orgasmic meditation before she started One Taste, although she didn't name the monk and nor the lineage the monk studied under. Just a general orgasmic monk. One Taste originally operated two communal-style urban retreats, as they were called, one in San Francisco and the other in Lower Manhattan. They then expanded to Los Angeles and London. They produced media, held workshops, weekend retreats, and a coach training program. All of that cost money, it won't surprise you to hear. The training was said to be about female empowerment through orgasmic practices, but there was also a male orgasmic practice, hand jobs, sacred hand jobs. which was not openly advertised because they felt they would be flooded with applicants if they advertised the male side. In 2014, One Taste was listed as the Inc. 5000 fastest growing company, and by 2017 had a revenue of 18 million of your United States dollars. In 2015, a former employee received a six-figure settlement for sexual assault and harassment. International media attention and controversy followed. It led to an FBI investigation into One Taste for prostitution, sex trafficking, and violation of labor law. In 2018, One Taste closed all of their US locations and stopped hosting in-person classes, although they continued online. After the FBI investigation, they've rebranded and are operating as the Institute of OM. They say OM, it's OM, orgasmic meditation, which looks like OM to us, but if in the know, it's OM. And Unconditional Freedom Project. The FBI investigation is ongoing and no charges have yet been brought, but let's remember it took the FBI 2 years to get Hunter Moore after they had evidence of his hacking activities. We covered that in episode 21, Most Hated mm-hmm. Man on the Internet. So the FBI does work slowly, but they work, shall we say, thoroughly. So, whew. Gia, why don't you get us started? Let's lens out a little bit first. What is a cult? What's the difference between a cult and a social club, let's say?
Oh, so there is a lot to really process about what can make a group be identified as a cult rather than like an exclusive club or an inner circle or a social gathering, if you will, a social club. So this isn't a one size fits all situation, but I think that these are kind of like the general ideas of what we want to think about as we move forward in our discussion of cults and maybe some of the groups or social circles or practices that I consider cults may not be considered a cult to other people or vice versa. Maybe some people consider other groups to be cults that I wouldn't necessarily consider a cult in practice, but I think that's another discussion for another day. There is definitely room for conversation about like what makes a cult within the religious practice, as we talked about in Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey as well. And it's very interesting to really delve into the ideology of a cult. That's why I feel like I have so much fascination around the study of cults. But I will say that when we're trying to identify a group as a cult or not, I will say that a cult usually being the operative word here, can be identified by a few key pillars, one of which would be a charismatic leader. And this leader is, even though they might not say, like in this case, I would assume that they wouldn't say in everyday conversation that Nicole Dadone was a god to them. You know, like they weren't saying that she was this all-powerful, all-knowing being. But the ideology within One Taste really backs up this claim that Nicole was the leader. And really, at the end of the day, what she says goes. You know,
yeah, I mean, it's that idea of that charismatic leader who cannot be questioned.
Yes, exactly. Like
Catholicism, for example.
As someone that went to Catholic school, yes, absolutely. Charismatic leader that cannot be questioned. But I think that this is also can be followed by that there is a inner circle within the club or a group of elites. And those are the people that they aren't quite at the spot of the charismatic leader. They aren't, you know, they can be questioned if the leader says that they can be questioned. Their role in the cult is not absolute. If the leader says that they have to go, they will still, you know, be forced to leave without question. But they are as high as the regular folk in the cult can advance to. And those are the people that make up the charismatic leader's inner circle. And as we see in One Taste, these individuals are really like the enforcers, the employees, the people that are in the cult function on a day-to-day basis. So these are the people that almost like the morality police. I think that would be a good way of forming it if we're talking about a cult in general.
Yes. And those are the people that like the quote unquote lower people in the cult or group aspire to be. Like they aspire to get closer to that inner ring, that inner circle, to be in that under level. And that's mm-hmm. another way that the leader can keep people in line by having them aspire to be closer to them.
Yes, they even said that Rachel, her second in command, Rachel Chirwitz, was her enforcer. They actually, mm-hmm. One of the talking heads used the word enforcer. And it means that the charismatic leader can be benevolent while their will is being imposed by that very inner circle, as you say, Gia.
Yes. And I think another idea that kind of plays into this idea of what makes a cult would be the predatory ideology. And when I say predatory, I mean that this is an ideology that on the surface seems to be seeking to help individuals that are marginalized in some way. In the case of One Taste, I would say that they're targeting towards people that maybe are unconfident in their lives, that people that mm-hmm. are struggling with depression, some form of mental illness, maybe that these are people that are struggling financially or within their careers. I think Scientology is a great example of this and their predatory ideology, but they have mm-hmm. some type of mission or goal or practice that is geared towards helping people. But what mm-hmm. it really is doing is searching for vulnerable people that are more susceptible to joining this cult because they are in such a vulnerable place and they're looking for some form of comfort or some positive change in their lives, because that's when individuals are most susceptible to being in a cult. And I think that, like, with One Taste, something that we're hearing, especially towards the end of the documentary, is we're hearing individuals saying, like, they see comments of people saying, how could they allow themselves to be involved in this type of ideology? How do you let yourself fall so deeply entrenched into what is going on? How are you so complicit? I would never be able to have that happen to me. But I think a lot of people don't really think about this of, you know, what you would do when you're at your lowest point. And as someone that has really struggled with depression and anxiety myself at different points in my life, I will say that, like, this is something that I thought about, that if I didn't have support systems in place, that I would probably would be reaching out to other social circles that would make me susceptible to a cult like this. So
The thing is that nobody joins a cult. Nobody joins a cult. Yes. They go to a social gathering. They go to a meditation workshop. They go to a Dianetics demonstration. I mean,
a juice bar.
They go to a juice bar. They go to church to find community. So to say, how could you be involved in this extraordinary, you know, what ends up sort of a cult-like BDSM rape apologist group? It wasn't that when they joined.
Yeah,
when they were taken by the hand and brought in Murray.
And Chris, one of the former teachers, Master Stroker, I think.
Yes, he was a
former member, and he was the head of the head of the BDSM classes as well. He says, like, he was having trouble in relationships. It seemed like a lot of the people here in this cult specifically were having trouble connecting with the opposite sex. And he said, I wanted to get laid, but I had a really hard time of getting a girlfriend. So that was kind of the fly in the ointment. That was the hard part. And I was just kind of like, I don't know how I like that wording. It's like,
back to
men wanting sex, but like
it not comes wanting back women. Yes. he went to a introductory session and moved into the commune that evening.
Yeah.
And that past.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that when you have this insecurity or something that is really this mental block, maybe I would say, that is really, you feel like it's hindering the quality of your life. Like, if you're, you know, struggling with dating, and I think, you know, at some aspect, who doesn't deal with some type of relationship or dating woes, whether it's you're struggling to get a date, or if you identify somewhere on the asexuality spectrum, maybe you don't want a date. And that is something that hasn't been normalized enough where people can just accept that you don't want a date, you know? But I feel like at some point in adulthood, this is something that will strongly impact you in some way. So having this cult around sex and relationships and sexuality is an all important topic, because it, and somehow, some way, people are going to be impacted by this in some way or another.
And this escalation that we see with Nicole and with One Taste towards deeper and more disturbing practices, disturbing to me, certainly. I don't mind the BDSM, but the if you get raped, I got raped and all I got was a victim story was a t-shirt that she proposed that if you are fully within your power, you can't be raped because there's nothing to be raped. Very disturbing language. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I gave that warning to start with. So is that also an aspect that we see with cults, that they start on a kind of benign level, even if it's, I want to make some money from people and people listen to what I say. Do we see that what we would call escalation of practice, deepening of the bonds around the members as they become deeper and deeper financially to the cult so that they end up with no money of their own, so they sort of have to be in the cult?
Yeah.
Do we see that generally in cults, this kind of escalation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because you need to go through a period of like normalizing the ideology that you are becoming entrenched in, whether you know it or not. But like you said, Sarah, beforehand, no one joins a cult, you know, like no mm-hmm. one just goes in and says, I'm going to join a radical sex organization that I'm going to lose a lot of my agency in when I'm going. Like, I don't think anybody that was joining One Taste had that in mind. But there were different parts in the documentary that really stuck out to me when they were talking about their indoctrination process. Like, as someone that my first job after graduate school was that I was an HIV prevention instructor, and part of that was doing sex education classes, like safe sex 101 practices with individuals that were in shelters. And, you know, like there's something appealing about doing sex education, you know, like something where your career is involved in sex. It seems like a fun first job to have. Whereas the job that I had a lot of very serious aspects about it. I can definitely see why other people just out of college, younger individuals, were attracted to the idea of being involved in a job that was about sex positivity, especially in a time mm-hmm. when it feels like that is getting more mainstream attention in our area. So those are the things that people are really finding themselves attracted to. And if we want to talk about sex, you know, why not make this a job? Why not normalize the practice? But there are certain things that the unfortunate part about talking about sex so openly is that we need to have some uncomfortable conversations in the process. And unfortunately, I don't think that One Taste handled their ideologies very well. And I think that's, you know, as we get further into the documentary, we start to see how some of Nicole Dadone's own thought processes were found to be like very predatory, very heavy on victim blaming. And in a way where she would say that, you know, there are no victims, you make yourself a victim, and things that are very counterproductive to this idea of sex positivity, which I think is the initial ideology that someone going into One Taste was attracted to.
And not just sex positivity, which we love, but the female-centered sexual pleasure and the empowerment there. I mean, it became later the places that you hate are the places you should practice, was one of the things that she was saying. So that takes away your agency, because if you feel that something's crossing a boundary, no, that's your fault. Why is that boundary there? We're here to tear down that boundary. I was also very interested in this language that they used. They used stroking. I mean, it's a normal word, but they used it in a very specific mm-hmm. way. Master stroker. They used the word nailed. They used the word killed. They used the awful phrase, skillful violation. They used the P word and the C word. And to me, it was like when we saw groups and Nicole would say, pussy, everybody would laugh delightedly. But I also think that it was a very deliberate use of those words to say, oh, aren't we being a little bit naughty and a little bit transgressive? She would say, oh, well, that's breaking down your barriers, your sexual barriers. But the fact that, I mean, I could list, you know, probably not 100, but I'd say 25 words for vagina, maybe as many for penis. They only use those two. So it was like mm-hmm. almost a sanctioned language. We know it's the P and the C, and that's what we call it. What did that strike you as, Mari, that kind of specificity of language that they were almost indoctrinating into the members.
Well, they said that it was kind of to make the members uncomfortable. It's like to make you so uncomfortable, keep pushing your boundaries until it's no longer a boundary, right? Like to make them uncomfortable with those words. And till they get used to it, till they're no longer uncomfortable with it. So then they can move on to the next thing that they want you to do that you might feel uncomfortable about. But then if you keep doing it, then you get more and more comfortable with it. It's a form of manipulation and
it's
guidance.
Grooming, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's actual grooming,
not what people on Twitter are calling grooming.
Yeah. It's a way to make people bend to your will, to bend to a certain culture so that they then become engraved or into that culture, to then not being able to function once you're out of that culture, and to never want to leave that culture, and not want to have to leave your friends or the people who quote unquote understand you, you know, to not leave them. So I think these are great points about cults. Do you have any more, Gia? Or
going off of what you were just saying, I think that this idea of grooming or like taking advantage of past trauma, I think it's also kind of like a plot of this concept that we've already been covering when we're talking about what makes a cult. But we talk a lot about in this documentary about people that went through some type of trauma. Nicole claims to have gone through a lot of trauma in her childhood because of her father, whether or not that is true. But other of the former members of One Taste, I should say, have also mentioned that they went through some type of sexual trauma in their past and usually in childhood. And that has a lot of ramifications for anybody. But at the end of the day, no matter how you phrase it, it does not feel good to be a survivor of sexual violence. So a lot of these individuals are trying to find ways to cope with the trauma that they had no control over when they were so young, or even, you know, trauma that they went through in their adulthood as well. And, you know, Nicole's ideology and how, you know, like you're only a victim if you make yourself one, is incredibly damaging to survivors of sexual trauma. And I do not endorse this ideology in any which way, but I can definitely see as a survivor of sexual trauma that you think maybe this is what I need to try to move past this trauma that I went through in my life, whether or not, you know, whether or not you can ever move past something like that fully is a whole other conversation. But how some people can be impacted, particularly in a cult like One Taste that is so enraptured in the ideology of sex and how One Taste looks.
And they're coming all over the place 3 or 4 times a day. Like
coming all everywhere, at least.
Everywhere.
Sarah, no, you should be doing it at least 5 times a day. I'm pretty sure.
I should be owning, right?
That's what she said.
But look, I mean, I was fascinated by
a lot of work.
I was fascinated by Mike Marinacci, a former student, an older man, interestingly. He's actually the one that drew the connection with L. Ron Hubbard and said, yeah, she's been influenced by L. Ron Hubbard and she knows the power of celebrity. He's actually a ritual expert and a Freemason. I found him very, very interesting. But he talked about being sort of broken down in a session, you know, stripped back. They called it being killed or killing. Mm-hmm. And Nicole lifted him into her arms and laid his head on her breast. And he was looking up at her. And he said most of him was ready to absolutely give himself over to her as mother, as sort of mummy. It's like reparenting. And there was a part of his mind that looked at her and said, I know exactly what you're doing. You want me to imprint on you. And it was very interesting to have this man, we don't know what his damage was. We don't know why he was there. He doesn't go into it. But it was very interesting to have him describe that moment. And you could see, he didn't quite say it, but like how easily he could have fallen into the rapture and the pleasure of being cradled in her arms, held against her breast, almost non-sexually, almost just that mother was taking care of him. And there was a small part of him that just held on and got himself out of the cult because he saw it.
nothing that Nicole is preaching here is new in a sense of like techniques and stuff like that. And like with sexual trauma, how some victims or some survivors, should I say, try to reclaim their bodies and their sexuality by being more sexually free and sexually liberating. Like, that's not anything new. The problem is when this cult tries to use that to justify re-traumatizing these people. Autumn Blanc is talking about her sister Aries' experience in one case. Aries, we're told that Aries and Autumn suffered from like sexual abuse as kids, and Aries saw one case as possibly helping her work through that, as she learned that Nicole went through something similar. And that, of course, Nicole was talking about how some people can be worked through that using one taste. But Aries ended up suffering because her boyfriend, who was also in one taste, was abusing her. And it eventually culminates in Aries getting raped, apparently, by multiple people. And her,
they call this skillful violation.
Yes, it's skillful violation. Disgusting. Yeah. Is very, very disgusting. And her finally realizing like this is not where she wanted to be, and this is not what she wanted. They kept trying to convince her that, they kept telling her her body wanted it like this. And it's just so effed up. You know what I'm saying? And I think this is where the documentary like really took the darkest turn. And it's very frustrating because it feels like it starts off with a message that could be positive and, you know, could be something that could help people, but it's always taken just too far, you know?
Yeah, the first hint of that darkness was the wonderful Audrey Wright. Audrey's with us throughout. We see video of her. I mean, this is another aspect of cults, right, Gia? They take a lot of film. I don't know why. Cults love filming everything. So we get to see, in fact, what is going on. But Audrey, who looks extremely young when she went, she's a queer woman, and the description that she gives of her treatment in one taste, she never says the words, but to me, it just smacks of corrective rape. And for that to be happening in the 2010s is, she's a very brave woman and she tells her story. She's not the only one, but that part of her story just really, you can tell I'm just speechless, and how others can see it as they did with Aries, if they can see her boyfriend hitting her in front of other members and they tell her your body wanted it.
Just one other area that I wanted to discuss really quickly is just this idea, which is, it also goes into this, you know, predatory ideology, but this idea that you have to pay to move up pillars, whether it's pay through sexual favors or what it usually means, pay with money to move up in the organization in general, is pretty evident about the cult. Like, you have to pay a certain amount of money to advance in the organization, to move up a pillar. And that is something that we can see throughout One Taste, and something that is very clear in many cults as well, like something that's very easy to identify. And part of it is, you know, something that we also see in a lot of intimate partner violence situation, is that this type of financial ruin that happens in this way of thinking is that not only does it make the organization rich, it also leaves the other individuals or the person that is paying to be financially dependent on the organization, and thereby making it much harder to leave, especially if you don't have outside help or people that, you know, relationships with people outside of the organization. That's one of the reasons why when you are born into a cult, it makes it even more difficult for the individual to leave the cult, even if they are incredibly unhappy with the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens to priests and imams and ministers who lose their faith in God. They become atheists, perhaps. What can they do? If you're a 45-year-old minister, your entire, your world, your housing, your money, your job, you're not trained for anything else. How do you leave? How do you leave the Church of England? How do you stop being a vicar? your entire identity is tied up in that community and that church, as well as your ability to earn money. And the same if you're an imam or a priest or any religious person who has genuinely and heartfeltly heard the call, become a religious, and then at some point lost that faith. But where do you go? And many of them, I believe, stay because it's their job, it's their livelihood, it's their community. So in a similar way, as you say, both in a cult and in a coercive control relationship, where I say to you, don't work, my darling, I will work, you don't have to work. Suddenly, where's your independence? Where's your money? How can you leave? I think that's a really good point there, Gia. Murray, what did you think of the documentary overall? What were your high-level thoughts?
It was one of those documentaries where going into, I've never heard of this case. I've never heard of One Taste, never heard of none of this, right? So I was in for the ride and I was like, okay, so what kind of cult is this going to be? You know what I'm saying? Because it's like orgasm cult. And then I was like, but what is it going to lead to in a sense, right? So I just kept trying to figure it out. I'm like, okay, this felt like Nexium. Like she had lots of Keith Raniere energy mixed with like a Elizabeth Holmes aspect. I was like, what is the crime going to be? Because I thought maybe the crime was going to be like more of a financial scamming type crime. I thought we were getting like maybe also a role in throwing the LuLaRoe, you know, type. Like I was trying to figure out what was the intersection between sex cult and what I thought was going to be a scam. I thought it was going to be like a scamming type vibe. But when it builds, I'm like, oh, dang, they're just a regular old sexual assault cult mind messing with. Like, it was very, very interesting. I felt that the documentary built this feeling of tension and darkness coming. Like, I love that feeling of it. I loved how they unroll it to you. It reminded me very much of The Vow, the original first two parts, or how they stretched that. But it definitely reminded me of like, okay, showing us what, oh, this is what you get on the entrance. I felt like I was being taken along for the ride of the cult, right? So it's like, oh, on the surface, it's female orgasms. Oh, we like to connect to people. Like, I felt like they were taking you through the cult. And I really like documentaries who, especially when we're talking about organizations like this, because the first 20 minutes or so, it's like explaining what they're showing people, like, oh, female orgasm, and you can be better, and this and that, and wellness. And then it slowly starts to like peel back, or like, oh, magic, maybe sex magic, rituals. Oh, wait, now she's mixing like sex with religion, and she's redefining words, and people are coming and
it's like, certainly coming.
Yeah. Like they're working for her for free. Oh, now she's making her employees have sex with each other when they don't want to. She's making them have sex with customers when they don't really want to. And then finally it's like full blown, like, oh yeah, she's a rape apologist. They're letting men release their beasts, and she's basically aiding in sexual assault. I'm like, oh well, gosh. Like,
yes, that was one of the other words I didn't note, really was the beast. We have they release the beast, and it's our job as women to allow them to release the beast, to not be afraid. Aries is told that she's afraid of her boyfriend's beast. No, he just hit her and nobody did anything about it. We start, you're absolutely right, because it starts with this glowing, happy woman, intense but vibrant, saying, we want to love, be loved, see, be seen, know our purpose, and feel connection. I mean, nothing original, but I can see why someone would say, yes, I do want that. And even I myself go, yeah, that sounds pretty good. That sounds like a pretty good recipe. Ajie, what did you think of the structure overall of this documentary?
So like Mari, I did not know about One Taste before you said, you know, are you interested in talking about this documentary? So I was going in very blind. I didn't even look up the organization before I started watching, which is usually, I usually at least do that, where I will look up the organization that we're talking about. And you said, you know, Orgasm Inc. I'm like, I am complete. I don't even need to know what this is about. This sounds lovely.
Sign me up.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, I can do that. But looking into it and learning more about it as I go, I guess I would say that for a first introduction to One Taste, it feels a little bit complicated because you're learning as you go how bad things got at One Taste for the survivors of One Taste. And in some ways that does feel like, oh, you know what? This is exactly what the followers of One Taste or the former members of One Taste also experienced, because everything did sound very good and different from usual approaches to sexuality. This was supposed to be a sexuality practice that was women-centered. And then the more we learn about it, the more in my mind, I'm thinking like for a organization that's supposed to be matriarchal and is centered around women's sexuality, it is awfully patriarchal. You know, it's just patriarchy repackaged for a new generation of people that are looking to center women's sexuality. This idea that women have to be subservient to men, in like they have to give in to the beast of men. Not only is that open for men to continue to be predatory, it doesn't serve women in any way. This is just, again, like falling into this line of like patriarchal ideology. Like this idea that women have to be just give in to men is not a new concept. You're just turning it into a company in the 2010s at this point, and it's led by a woman. And I can definitely see Nicole's charisma through the screen and how her personality is the type to draw in a large group of people. And I would say, you know, she is very smart, but then hearing a lot of the things that she was saying, especially the first time we hear her talk about rape victims, how they shouldn't look at themselves as victims, or, you know, you're only a victim if you make yourself one. That's when things really took a turn. I knew it was going to take the turn, but that was the first time where I was really like, is she serious right now? Like, this is how we're spinning this. And it's the perfect recipe to keep people trapped in the organization, but the devastating effects that it has on its followers is, I can't even imagine the trauma that you go through, especially when you're all living in the same place together.
In one of our talking heads, the wonderful Eleanor Auerbach, she talks about it becoming extreme, so that if you said something that she didn't want to hear, she, Nicole, didn't want to hear, Nicole would say, you are lying. No, you're lying. What's behind that? Go deeper, go deeper. Go into your fears, go deeper. And of course, you want to please this figure, this mother figure, this guru figure. And so you feel and find the fault in yourself. I didn't know anything about One Taste either, so I went in, as we all did, with fairly innocent eyes. Mm-hmm. And several times along the way, I just thought, she's just trying to see what she can get away with. It felt like Nicole's jollies. She was getting off, not on being master stroked, but she was getting off on seeing what she could make people do. It felt cruel. It felt masturbatory for her. Supposed to get someone else to stroke you, but they didn't really go into masturbation, which interested me. You had to get someone else to do it. Also takes your agency away. She says that she, as a child, was the bait that her father, the pedophile, used to bring in other young girls. But she's now worked through all that, and that her father is fine. She forgave him before he died in prison on 54 counts of child molestation. So presumably those children's body, I can't even say what her version of it is. It's too disgusting. She's worked as a sex worker. We're very sex positive here. Nothing wrong with sex work. Sex work is work. But she's worked as a sex worker, and she talked about allowing her clients to choke her, and that eventually after they choked her, they would cry. So she saw them come through to the other side. Whether this is true or not, we start to take everything she says with a grain of salt. She continues the work now with these new named organizations. It's out in an isolated part of the countryside. So again, we often see this, Gia, don't we, with cults that they may start in a populated area and then they move towards a more isolated area, perhaps with not so many eyes around. But the FBI has the case. We don't know who's going to be charged with what. The interesting thing is the labor laws that have been violated. Mm-hmm. And you almost feel like, well, they might get them on the labor laws if they can get them on the assault laws, because one of our talking heads, it was a very, very young boy when he joined. We see him in the footage as we have. So this is Ruan. And he talks about being told you'll get 20% of all the sales from this region. Oh, no, you share 20% of all the sales from this region. No, you get a percentage of your sales. Uh-huh. And so that's always shifting. And he said if you asked about money, you were accused of being money-focused, which is, of course, a bad thing.
Yeah, and I'll talk about it in my recommendations, but one of the other talking heads, Alana, she talks about in a different podcast interview how she quit her job and was working for free with Nicole to help open the One Taste Center. So this is how it normally happens, right? They can't get the cult leader on the sexual assault or the abuse because everybody's very tight-lipped or hush-hush, but they'll get them on the tax evasion, they'll get them on the money fraud, or they'll get them on the labor laws. So not surprised at all that that's another factor to this, and that hopefully it's one of the ways that they can stop this organization altogether.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things is that One Taste's public statement is that, I mean, they were asked to contribute to the documentary, and there's a very interesting wording, which was accommodations couldn't be reached, so they didn't. But they did give several statements, and one of them is that all
so
the sections... Yeah, somebody.
At the end.
No, it's very funny. But one of the statements was that all the sexual activity was consensual. And this is why, Mari, as you say, it can sometimes be hard to prove assault. Mm-hmm. But as we know, one former employee has received a settlement but it was also for the labor practices as well. So it gets very murky.
Dicey,
yeah, indeed.
All of it, yeah.
One of the stories that I found really interesting was the story that we first saw of Alana. They were talking about digging deep and really talking mm-hmm. about your innermost desires. And she felt like she got to the deepest part of her, which was her admitting out loud for the first time ever that she wanted to have a baby, which she never admitted out loud. And that could have been really a profound moment for her. But then Nicole wasn't satisfied with that answer because it didn't really relate to One Taste, because One Taste isn't really interested in this idea of sexuality in terms of how it leads to children, which is a part of some people's paths for, you know, their sexual journey is like a journey into motherhood, or, you know, like your sexuality with a partner and everything like that. So this could have been like a radical transformation in there, but Nicole wasn't satisfied with this because it doesn't really relate to One Taste mission. So she went on about it and was saying how, okay, well, like dig deeper. And Nicole wasn't satisfied until it was something that she wanted her to answer, which ended up being that she wanted to do a session, which was basically, you know, I want to do another thing that I have to spend money on that shows the greatness of One Taste. And yeah.
It was an all-day demonstration. In other words, she would be publicly masterstroked, and the idea was to have an all-day orgasm. And this was not something she wanted at all, but Nicole was absolutely satisfied by that. When we're talking about the money, everybody, a retreat cost $36,000. And
Christ.
You could buy a membership, which was a yearly membership, for $60,000. But it didn't mean that you weren't also paying along the way for classes and so on. So for me, Nicole, it was a combo of that poor little girl. You got to think about that poor little girl with a pedophile for a father, using her as bait, trying to work out her own demons and her own damage and turning it back on the other people with what can I make them do? What can I make them do? Plus, if they pay me money, I am legitimized. Murray, your final thoughts before we give our ratings?
Very interesting. I'm more like interested that I never heard about this. You know what I'm saying? Like, never heard about this. I do want to say that I think this documentary follows a lot. I think we didn't hear about this, but also the reason why we're hearing about it now is because, again, cults and scams are in demand now in true crime. And I think with the demand of like NXIVM, information about NXIVM, information about like what we just talked about last time, the like the Mormon cult and stuff like that. Like, I think this is what brought One Taste to light. And I'm very like glad that it did, because it feels like it's all of these trappings. Like, One Taste really feels like she took a little bit of everything. Like, we even see it in the documentary. She talks about Buddhism. She talks about Scientology. She took a little bit of like all of these other known cults and criminal organizations and rolled them into One Taste but put the bow on it as it being a sex cult. And it's quite fascinating.
For Nicole to get what she wants, which is to like make herself seem more worldly, see more wise, someone that's really studied these ancient practices, but doesn't actually look into like the individual structures and natures of these practices, and is really just like whitewashing them. For lack of a better term.
Yeah, even the use of the title One Taste. This comes from Buddhist practice, which is, this practice has one taste, and that is the taste of liberation. So, but she's not using that entire phrase. It's the same way that I try not to use the word karma. You know, you're rude to me and then you trip over and I go, oh, that's karma. It's not karma, because the karma of this life, if you believe it, is you working out your misdeeds in a past life. We take it, we simplify it, and we use these buzzwords. I mean, smart woman, it absolutely worked. So in November of 2020, the BBC Radio 4 released a 10-part investigative podcast. It's called The Orgasm Cult. It has been on my list of to listen to for a long time. And now that we've seen this documentary, I might go back to it. They spoke with former workers of the company. They detailed allegations of emotional, financial, and sexual abuse, with some saying that One Taste teachings and practices gaslit many women, leaving them with symptoms of PTSD. And we saw something of that in the documentary. The podcast also spoke to experts about how the medical establishment's dismissal of women's health concerns pushes many women towards the growing and unregulated wellness industry and companies like One Taste. And I did find this very interesting. Gwyneth Paltrow does pop up, Mari. This idea of the wellness industry being something that people turn to because they feel that they're not listened to.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, were we not expecting Gwen Paltrow to pop up here?
That's a whole other podcast.
Right. It was one of those moments where I was like, yeah, this makes sense. I'm not surprised. I saw a Kardashian sprinkled in there as well. Yes. So I was like, where there are cults, there are celebrities. Where there are sex cults, I'm not surprised there are celebrities, you know, and they, of course, they talk about it using the appeal and the draw of celebrity to bring other people in. It is cult 101.
Yes. And this idea, this general sort of wellness idea, it's fascinating that one would think it's sort of the loopy left that's all in and on about the wellness. But the connection between the wellness industry and the conspiracy theorists of the right is fascinating. Not to be gone into here, but it's something to look at if our listeners are interested.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So to our ratings, Gia, how many magnifying glasses are you going to rate Orgasm Inc. out of a possible 5?
Ooh, this is interesting because I feel like if I knew more about One Taste ahead of time, perhaps I would have like a more refined opinion about the documentary, like how the different ways that this story could be told in the way that I feel like I had a better idea of my thoughts around Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey, because I had already learned so much about the FLDS. I will give it a, it's a out of a possible 5.
Yes.
You said I would give it 3 for right now, because I feel like there were still some parts of clarification that I would like that weren't thoroughly explained in the documentary. And maybe that's just because of the nature of One Taste and that a lot of these cases still aren't figured out. And I would have been personally more interested in how One Taste, you know, mishandled the different ideologies that didn't really necessarily relate to One Taste's agenda. I'm thinking about like Audrey's story with being a queer woman and her mistreatment in One Taste, which was a lot different in some ways from people that are identifying as a straight cis woman. So I would like to learn a little more about that. And I think that was more of just, it was treated more as a side comment when that could be its whole, its own story. Yeah, it could be its own episode. But I think like, and especially if we're talking about sex positivity, part of, you know, my idea of sex positivity is talking about sexuality in a way that is non-patriarchal, but also, you know, like not exclusively, like not exclusively cis and not exclusively homogeneously one race, sexuality, or heterosexual. So, you know, this is part of the issue with One Taste, because it doesn't seem like they really had answers to these questions. But I would like to explore that idea more so. But it did make me want to learn more about One Taste. And I'm hoping we get some positive changes in this field as a result of what I'm hoping are some impending charges in for One Taste.
The podcast from the BBC might open those doors for you. Mari, a documentary, not a three-part series, so necessarily it doesn't cover as much ground.
Right.
How did you find this one? Was it successful to you? What's your rating out of 5 magnifying glasses?
Yes. So my rating is going to be a 3.5. I agree with Gia on everything that she said. But the 0.5, I'm giving it an extra 0.5 because I love the editing and how it was put together. So I'm going to give it that extra 0.5. But then I do agree, I take the whole other 1.5 away, because I, with like Gia said, I still feel like we might have missed a little bit here, because I'm glad it's just a documentary, not a three-part series. But I do agree that we could have settled a little bit more on the darker side of it and what was going on. Like darker, because I feel like there's a lot more there than we got. It felt like a natural flow and progression, but it was really interesting how it went from like, again, cool, yay, orgasm, all right, cool, where we're all touching each other and I'm taking people's money, okay, cool, still, but then like we're okaying rape and now we're aiding and abetting rape in a sense. Like, I really want to know how that connected in a sense. So I completely agree with Gia on that. Other than that, it's a very straightforward documentary. I think it's put over by the fact that this to me is something new, like a sex cult, if you will, a celebrity driven sex cult is not something you see every day. It almost reminds me of like sex magic and stuff that used to happen in the 50s and 60s and 70s that led L. Ron Hubbard to starting Scientology. Very much in that vein of like, it has an old school cult flavor with a modern twist on it. In a sense, like Gia said, it's still patriarchy. It's still like cult ideals and manipulation, but they're like, but women, yay. Like,
yay.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yes. But it's like, it's a trick, you know? And so I enjoyed it. I did. I enjoyed it. It's a pretty easy watch. I think I might be getting just disenchanted with a lot of stuff going on right about now, you know, so I'm definitely going to enjoy our break. But it was interesting enough. So 3.5. How about you, Sarah?
Yes, I'm 3.5 as well. I absolutely recommend this documentary. Mm-hmm. It's an hour and 27 minutes. You know that Mari and I very much like that single documentary. You sit, you watch. I think the structure was very good. I think, as has been said, it's like you are being taken through the steps as a member almost, that you're very elevated and happy and coming right, left and center, and then slowly your credit card's being charged and then various terrible dark things are happening. Yeah. So the editing is superb. So it's not coincidental because one of the directors is a very, very accomplished editor and their IMDb page is full of very good work. Mm-hmm. So I would like to give one taste as 0 stars. So I'm trying not to let my revulsion for this woman and this organization taint my rating for the documentary. For us here on Crime Scene, 3.5 is a very good rating. Yeah. Don't get us wrong. So that's Amari and I at 3.5, Gia at 3, and all of us recommending that you watch it. And then perhaps you might like to do some extra work listening to the BBC podcast or doing some reading of your own. Mm-hmm. Gia, what do you have to recommend to our listeners?
As a former sex educator, I thought it could be really beneficial to, instead of recommending works around one taste, that we could recommend some work around like more positive, holistic, sex positive ideologies. Yeah. So I grabbed a bunch of my books and I'm very excited to recommend some for our listeners. First and foremost, one of my favorite writers, philosophers, one of just my favorite people to talk about their work in general. I highly recommend anything you can get your hands on by Adrienne Marie Brown. She has 2 books particular that I like, which are, one is Emergent Strategy. It's inspired by the work of Octavia Butler in her work, not just as a science fiction writer, but as a Black queer writer in general. It has a lot of great ideas around the idea of group work and how we look at social movements in a way that is sustainable. And so I think that if you're looking to break free from this idea of toxic social groups, Emergent Strategy is a really well-written take on it. And you can, at the very least, you will get some good ideas about maybe how you look at the social groups or the social movements that you are personally involved in. But the one that I think is a must read for anybody that wants to learn more about sex positive activist work, I highly recommend Adrienne Marie Brown's work, Pleasure Activism. It's one of my favorite books of all time, not just as an anthology series or something on social sciences. It's just one of my favorite books in general. It is about social movements and how to break free of this patriarchal system and how, like, the white supremacist patriarchal complex that we know that has taken over a lot of our, not just social world, but how we look at sex, money, and in our social relationships, how we look at ourselves as people, are really handicapped by that in different ways that we can break free of that, not just in terms of sex, but how we find pleasure in other aspects of our life. It's a very easy read. It's so good. And there is a lot of fantastic work in here. So I cannot recommend Pleasure Activism enough. Finally, I also just want to say that as we are talking about how do we approach sex positivity in a way, and I've been using sex positivity a lot, kind of as, I hate using buzzwords, but I feel like that's the best way for me to explain to people a very complex ideas that I am trying to summarize for listeners that may be new to this concept, because this is something that I spent all of my grad school period talking about. But I would say, when you have the chance, if you are interested, read something by a sex worker, because sex work activists are some of the, you know, the history of sex work activism is entrenched in almost every social movement that you can possibly think of, particularly when it comes to sex positivity, or how we are looking at freeing ourselves from these movements that are that like patriarchy has us entrenched in. So I would say find what speaks to you and learn about the work, the history of sex workers and sex work activism, because sex work activism as a whole is usually somehow some way involved in pretty much every social movement that we could think of. So some of the recommendations, and I'll say these a little fast so that I'm not taking up too much of people's time, but I would say that my thesis was around the slut walk movement. So I will have to recommend Slut Walk, Feminism, Activism, and Media by Caitlin Mendez, which is a look at the history of slut walk and how different countries with different social structures and social ideologies interpreted the slut walk movement. So I think that's a really good way of kind of breaking apart the white feminist complex that we seem to find with a lot of sex positive movements. Whores and Other Feminists by Jill Nagel. Sex Workers Unite, the history of the movement from Stonewall to Slut Walk. So I do recommend that as well. And though these ones aren't specifically sex workers, I think we could get a lot of good information from it. So I say read the Crunk Feminist Collection. This is not by sex workers, but this is just, you know, for women of color, people that want to learn more about women of color. And they have pretty much every topic in there, their takes on a lot of like the social media, social culture that we have come to. Read the Crunk Feminist Collection. I cannot recommend this enough. It is so good. And for people that are looking for more of a complex read and how we look at women in social movements, I would say, finally, my last one, read Beyond Respectability, The Intellectual Thought of Race Women by Brittany C. Cooper. And that will be the last one that I recommend.
All of these will be in the show notes, and listeners, there will be a homework test next week.
I had absolutely nothing prepared the last one that we did, and so I said, this time I'm bringing everything I possibly can. Yes.
And wonderful. Obviously, this isn't a
visual
medium, but we have been entertained by Gia holding up the books.
One by one.
Visual aids.
I am very big on physical copies. I understand the appeal of like Kindle reads or like having the ebooks, but I hate ebooks personally. On a personal level, I am just like a big physical copy type of person. So And I guess on top of that, just support your local library. Like,
I thought you were going to say support your local sex workers. So you could do that.
I mean,
as well.
Like there are tons of funds out there that could definitely use your support, whether it's vocal support or monetary support, especially as we're getting to the winter holidays. There is a lot of people in need during this time, especially as the months get colder. So find ways that you can support your community.
That was great. I swear I have a great follow up, but I don't know that was pretty good. So I do have a podcast. It's called Trust Me. Cults, Extreme Belief Manipulation. I'm recommending the actual episode called Alana Arbach, where one of our talking heads, Alana, she talks to the hosts, Lola Blanc and Megan Elizabeth, on the Trust Me podcast about her time with One Taste. And I recommend this because Alana in here goes in depth of the like beginning of One Taste. Like, she was there when Nicole was still like a kind of like apprenticing under somebody else. And from what Alana says, she didn't learn her stuff from a Buddhist monk. It was from another 70s style guy who had these same beliefs. Like, so She goes in depth about what it was like as it slowly transformed and how she was there when she watched it transform to when her and her husband leaves One Case kind of early on. They don't stay there long during what is the later periods of them like collecting the money and getting into some of the darker things. But I found it really interesting that she was there from the beginning and she talks about some of the roots of One Case. So definitely go check that out. If you want some more information about One Taste. However, if you're like me and you're just kind of over it and you want something to just chill and mellow out because the holidays are here and you just want to, you know, not think about this stuff, go watch Singles Inferno on Netflix. It is a Korean dating show and it's there on their second season. I love the first season. I talked about the first season on our one of our like sister podcasts, Nothing But Netflix. On the RHAP network, and season two just started a few weeks ago. So it's such a relaxing watch. It's hard to explain, but it's a Korean dating show. And it's a dating show where they're on a deserted island trying to meet singles, but they can't tell the person what they do for a living, what their age is, and where they're from. Until they match as a couple and then go to what is called paradise. And then while they're in paradise, they're in this really cool resort where they get to eat all of this food. They get to talk casually and tell each other about their lives. And at the end of it, we'll see if any couples leave together. But it's so much different than our like really over-sexualized American dating shows. It is just something so like chaste and pure and like a really fun watch. There's a little bit of colorism there, but I mean, like, take that with a grain of salt. It's still a really good, relaxing watch. So go check that out if that's something that it's something that's up your alley. What about you, Sarah? Any recommendations?
Well, I have a recommendation from our wonderful listener, Shondell, who always sends in great recommendations. This is also a bit of an antidote. It's a crime documentary, but it's Long Shot from 2017 on Netflix. It's certainly one that I very much liked. It's the story of Juan Catalan, who was accused of murder. Of course, it's a murder that he did not commit. His alibi was that he was at Dodgers Stadium watching a Dodgers game. Very hard to prove that alibi, except that, incredibly, Curb Your Enthusiasm was filming on that day, and they look through the raw footage to see can they spot Juan in the raw footage of Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's a short watch, it's a great watch, and it's a fun little mystery knot that won't have you tensely gripping the side of your chair, but in fact relaxing. Mm-hmm. Which is what we like. And so at Crime Scene, we're eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes, as well as recommendations like our listener, Shondell. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP, that's Scene S-E-E-N, or email us at crimescenerhap@gmail.com.
We're also on TikTok at crime.scene and on Instagram at Crime Scene Podcast.
Yes. So, Gia, what do you have going on and where can the people find you?
Oh, well, finishing up Survivor 43 coverage now on Silent Podcast with my recap podcast for US Survivor. I don't know about that. I'm very excited. I have Omer Zahir from last season joining us, and I am so happy to have my second Survivor player joining us on the podcast. So I am just very excited to have that happen as well.
Past and future guest on Crime Scene.
Mm-hmm. Past and future guest on Crime Scene as well. Mm-hmm. And also on Silent Podcast, I finished my Claim to Fame coverage on my podcast Sister Act, which was actually recorded with my sister, Ariana. It was her first podcast. And I must say that podcasting must be a family trait because she is a natural. And I was just very happy to do a project like this with my sister. For people that have watched Claim to Fame, they know that it's like a very low key, funny show, but a lot of good strategy along the way. So I was very happy to do that coverage with my sister on Silent Podcast. So I recommend both of those. We are in the mid-season break and post-show recaps with our coverage of Abbott Elementary with me and Chappelle, but we want to get renewed for season 3. So give it lots of listens, rate us 5 stars, and comment about how funny and knowledgeable Chappelle and I are, because it's all true. And if you don't think that, just rate us 5 stars anyway. And on Inside Survivor, I am doing my weekly roundups with my good friend Christine Pellin about Survivor 43. We're going to be on a break now and going into Survivor 44, but I think we have some good work coming your way. So I would say keep an eye out for that, because I'm very excited to see the future of our work. And finally, you can just follow me on Twitter at ClassicallyGia for all of my reality TV shenanigans. And if you're a Survivor fan like myself, you can also follow the Survivor Diversity campaign at Surf Diversity. That's at SURV Diversity. And if you are like me and super grateful for all of the fantastic new contestants that we have gotten from the new diversity initiatives, thank your local Black Survivor alumni, because they are the ones responsible for that change. And also, happy holidays.
Awesome. Mari, what about you?
Of course, you can find me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's 2 like the number 2. The Wrestling Rant Hop Up is on hiatus right now. So just make sure you follow me or my co-host Matt Scott at Matt Scott GW on Twitter, so you know when we are coming back. That's it.
You can follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carradine. You can catch me over on Silent Podcasts, recapping The Traitors UK week by week with Australian Ninja Warrior Sean Bryan. On Post Show Recaps, I'm covering Welcome to Chippendales with the great Jason Reed, and those are both ongoing into the new year. So that's it for the year in true crime on Crime Scene. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Thank you to all of our wonderful guests over our first year. Thank you to Rob Cesternino, the podfather of RHAP, for giving us this platform. And you, yes, you, thank you for listening, subscribing, and sending your comments and recommendations. And thank you, Mari, for embarking on this quest with me. Quest? I don't know. Crime? Mission? Whatever it is that we're doing.
All of the above.
Case, thank you. We're taking a week off, and then we'll start again on January the 10th. Follow us on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP or any of the other places to find out what we'll be covering and who our guest will be. Thanks to Gia Worthy for joining us, Will from America for the theme music, Tricky Rice for the graphics, and Chelsea Lesser and Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes